Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Real Deadwood Podcast, episode number 4. And this is a variety show from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota for fans of the award-winning HBO Deadwood series. I'm Paul Dennis Kopko. I'm here every week. I'm bringing you news, interviews, and entertainment. I'm a little bit late this time in putting out this episode. It's been a little more than a week, actually, but if you listen to the very first Real Deadwood podcast, you'll know that I'm a professor and webmaster at Black Hills State University, and last week was finals week, so I had to give some exams and do some grading and stuff like that, so I got a little bit behind, but now that finals are over, and especially since Christmas break is coming up here, I'll be able to hopefully get back on track and keep these shows coming right out at you. Today we've got a fantastic show as usual. We're going to start off with some more of the press conference of the Deadwood actors who came to the Real Deadwood and visited last summer. And then we're going to have some part two of my interview with Jerry Bryant, who is the researcher at the Deadwood's Adams Museum and House, who pretty much works specifically with HBO to provide them with research on characters, on buildings, on just about anything they want to know. And we'll find out a little bit more about his duties. Today, we're starting a series of interviews with Big Head Todd of Big Head Todd and the Monsters. They played here for the Deadwood Jam last August. No, in September. And he was nice enough to sit down and talk to me a little bit. So we're going to have part one of my interview with him. As usual, we have our sound seeing tour of Mount Moriah Cemetery, current home of Wild Bill Hickok and Calamity Jane, featuring Alex Kopko, my son, who was a tour guide there over the summer. So we're going to have the next segment there. And then we're going to have some more music from John Hawks' band, John Hawks, who plays All Star, and his band King Straggler. They were also here over the summer, and there's a video clip, actually two video clips of them on our website, realdeadwoodpodcast.com. So make sure you go there and check it out. And then we're going to have another little bit of conversation with Chuck Turbeville, who is one of the local Deadwood Here officials. We'll talk a little bit more about the Real Deadwood and what goes on here for tourists to do. Hopefully you'll be one of these days. And then we have a little bit of news that we'll talk about at the end of the show. So let's get started now with the next segment of the press conference with the 11 Deadwood actors who were here over the summer. Take it away, guys.
This is Robin Weigert.
This is Robin, a.k.a. the Sphinx. And you might be able to tell she's a little bit different than the character she
played. Well, I was going to ask if you would go howl on the street tonight, like a real fun.
What's that?
If you would go out howl on the street.
You know, that would be me, because...
The howler.
Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah, although if you read about her, I'm sure you guys have, it's like there's about 10 different accounts about her life. There's so much variety. And people who want to make a hero out of her, people who want to denigrate her, people who sort of cast it one way or another, it's very hard.
Stop it!
That was pretty
funny. So, but you know, I just go sort of David as you know, I get the character from what he writes, but he's David much more from independent. I tried bringing independent research in one time. But, you know, because there's stuff about what she did in the Wayne and Hickok stuff, you know, like she went, she took a butcher's knife, she went after McCall, and, you know, some people say it like that, you know, and David thinks that's all BS. So, but I was looking forward to playing this.
Yeah, so,
you guys enjoy working outside so much? I mean, is it nicer, better, more interesting working outside as much as you do? Well, what's the temperature?
Depends. What Friday nights are rough. Yeah. We pull an all nighter on Friday nights, and that's when I'm usually tucked into a good bottle of whiskey. So I'm missing that.
I never seen you miss that.
I don't drink. I sip.
One thing. Puzzles of work.
No, it can be. It depends. Like we were talking about when we shot the wedding or the funeral, when you're there and it's going on, you don't. It's rough.
Another thing is,
and it's cold out there at night.
Or hot.
Or hot. In the daytime.
You got to remember we're shooting either fall or the last two seasons either been fall or spring in Denver.
And we start in August.
And so we're dressed for spring in Deadwood, usually with three layers of clothes.
Yeah.
And it may be 110 out there where we're shooting.
And when Frank got hard and feathered, he actually got hurt. Right?
Yeah, he did.
Thank God.
Yeah, they actually screwed up one day. Well, first off, there was this extra, this old guy with a beard. Every day he'd say, "I'm going to turn feather you today." So the first time, two times he said that, I thought, oh, he's just an enthusiastic cat. And every time I go on the stage, say, "Are you the tar and feather today?" I said, "When they do tar and feather, I'm gonna be looking for this thing, because I'm just too enthusiastic." So anyway, we shot that scene all day, that was the scene when I watched it. It was so brief. I said, "Well, I can't believe we shot all day." But one of the takes, for some, it got hot, and when they put it on me, it was actually really hot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they used that tape, because I really screamed. I mean, I was acting on except on that one. And they said, "How did that happen?" So anyway, I said, "You know, if that happens again, it's going to be FBO Network, not THPN." But I actually put some aloe vera on that, you know. I mean, it was but you know, I didn't really. I kept watching a little bit closer after that. But it was, you know, I still got the scar.
Mm-hmm. Every time they tell you, this isn't going to hurt.
It always hurts.
We did all day in one take, it just happened like that.
It's very hard to do physical scenes like that. We actually don't get hurt, despite what they say.
Do you enjoy doing all the horse riding? I mean, getting on, I mean...
That's pretty much what it is. So, I mean, all my friends, when I first started doing this, they said, "Oh, man, you get to ride a horse." And I said, "I ride in town to get off the horse, and at the end of the season, I ride out." It's getting on and getting off. There's no...
I bet there's 75% of us on the show haven't been on a horse.
Yeah.
You ride it. It's like they had to teach me how to ride. And then they didn't use it. Like they taught me one morning...
You know, David, watch the squirt.
They just had me get it on. And I was pulling a muscle just getting on.
Yours are the horses.
Right on.
Yeah.
The theory is to keep the horse between you and the ground.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's a very physical show.
Yeah, a very physical show and a very awesome show. So there we go with a little more of the discussion. Now, don't forget, on the Real Deadwood Podcast website, realdeadwoodpodcast.com, you will be able to see some video clips of this press conference and be able to see who's saying what, where they're sitting, and kind of get the lay of the land. Also, keep in mind that, as usual, in the show notes for Episode 4, I will have a transcript of as closely as I can get it. Now, I can't guarantee that I can hear everything that's going on because... as I've said before, this was recorded with the little microphone on my camcorder, so we have to do the best we can to try to hear what's going on, and sometimes people spoke a little too quietly, and it's kind of tough to pick that up. But check out the transcript there, and you can kind of follow along and see who's saying what and figure out what they're saying. Now, if you listened to last week's little excerpt of the press conference, you heard Earl Brown, Dan Doherty, talking about taking a little ride with my next guest here, who is Jerry Bryant. He has it's called a Yamaha Rhino, and it's like a four-wheel drive vehicle, but it's got a little cab to it where you can sit inside. And then there's like a little area in the back, kind of a little cargo area. And he can take that thing just about anywhere he wants. We can take the back, like the fire trails and stuff, and a lot of the off-road places here in Deadwood to some of the old mining camps and some of the old destinations. So I took that same, the same little tour that Earl Brown took, and I did kind of write about it a little bit in the show notes for episode 3. You can take a look at that. So, and I brought my video camera, and I did bring my little recorder. The thing's kind of loud, so the audio may not be so great. I haven't really listened to it yet to see if I can filter out some of the engine noise. But the video is pretty cool. We actually went through Mount Moriah all the way up to the top of Mount Moriah and past Mount Moriah. So make sure you check out the Real Deadwood Podcast website, because not only will I be adding the video from my little trip with Jerry, but I'm always adding new photographs and new video clips of other things. And so that website has always got something new to look at. So let's hear what Jerry had to say this time.
One of the things that HBO has had me do is this work on the sets.
Uh-huh.
They'll call me up and say, well, what about this? What about that?
Uh-huh.
Some of this information they take.
Right.
Some of it
the stuff they want, just like the federal government.
Yeah, you got it.
They take the intelligence that they that fits their scheme,
right.
And they kind of ignore the rest.
It's the government of Milch.
Ah, I hear you. There you
go. David,
Republic of Milch.
Is a genius, no doubt.
Yep.
And anything he does, I support 100%.
Absolutely.
As a historian here in Deadwood, I have to say that it's been just gas working with him. But some things, like he wants to have torches on the street.
Right.
Torches were a no-no. They had lamp posts by, by spring of 1877.
Gas?
With, well, if not gas, with acetylene.
Uh-huh.
Or gasoline.
Uh-huh.
And they had boys hired to climb those poles and light those lights every night.
Uh-huh.
And I tried, I spent a lot of time trying to explain to the people at HBO.
Well, the thing is, it's a lot more atmospheric, too, because I remember when we were there on the set with the night that we saw them do the night shoot. Of course, you were there. We were all there. Just before the shoot, the guys had those smudge pots hiding behind the barrels and stuff. And the guys went and shook the smudge pots to get that smoke really coming out, you know. And then the smoke from the smudge pots made it look like the smoke from the torches. But you just couldn't tell where the smoke was coming from. But it gives it that whole hazy, dreamy, looking deal, and you're not going to get that from lampposts, I guess.
Well, unless
the fog rolls in or something.
Unless I light them. Then
there you go.
My Coleman light, it burns terrible at times. But, so they want to have open torches, and the problem with that was the fire hazard.
I was going to say, Deadwood burned to the ground.
So many times.
Twice, yeah, at least, if not more.
Oh, more.
Yeah, so.
And,
it's just. Probably wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody'd do that.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be scared to death. They'd come down. There are several occasions, like 4th of July, that I recorded and saw recorded in the newspapers, them having bonfires in the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a rare occasion.
Yeah. And I'm sure they had buckets of water and
I'm sure.
Whatever going on around there. Yeah.
The Deadwood Fire Department was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
Well, yeah. And then when the Chinese were here, they had their own fire department, right?
They had their own hose team.
Okay.
It was part of the Deadwood fire department.
Oh, I see. It was like a branch of the Deadwood.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
Yeah, we were pretty lucky in that because of some of the adventures of people like Saul Starr and other white people in the community, that we had a relatively calm community of Chinese people here.
Yeah. Speaking of Saul Starr, I was talking to John Hawks today. Well, and he's like, give my best to Mary and to Alex. And I said, I'm going to be interviewing Jerry. Oh, yeah, say hi to Jerry. And so, he's just the friendliest guy in the world.
Oh, yeah.
He's awesome.
Most of the crew and the actors that I've met are just the cream of the crop.
So we'll be hearing some of John Hawks' music a little bit later in the show. But right now we're going to hear some music from my next guest. I put together a little medley of a couple of his tunes, so let's see if you're familiar with these tunes, and here we go.
Everything is went up and gone.
And that is Big Head Todd and the Monsters. They played for the Deadwood Jam, which is our annual festival here that we have, music festival in the town of Deadwood. This was the 15th one this year, and we had quite a few big name acts, and I interviewed most of them. So they will be appearing here on the Real Deadwood podcast. So here's my part one of my interview with Big Head Todd. My guest here on the Real Deadwood podcast is Todd Park Moore, better known as Big Head Todd. Now, where did that name come from? Who came up with that?
I came up with it. We started out as a blues band, and blues bands are always something and the somethings.
Right.
And so we sort of got
the somethings.
That's right. So we kind of named ourselves. There's a fellow by the name of Eddie Cleanhead Vincent. So that's sort of where we got Big Head from.
That's awesome. You guys have been around for, it says, about 20 years or so in your bio, huh? When did you, how early were you playing music? Did you start when you were a little kid or?
I started off pretty early. My folks had a piano and I played sax and clarinet.
So are all you guys are from the Boulder area?
Yeah, we grew up in Denver, Littleton, and went to college in Boulder together, and that's where we formed. CU was the college and Columbine was the high school.
Uh-huh. You guys were here, what was it, 2 years ago?
I think it was 4 years ago.
Really? I guess, yeah, it was that long ago. Did you get to see any of Deadwood then, or have you been to the museum or seen any of the sites at all?
Just the bars and the casinos. But it's a beautiful place. It's a lot like where we come from.
Mm-hmm. Was it John McEwen basically that arranged for you guys to come here the first time?
Or I believe so.
Do you know John McEwen? I know he has some ties there to the Boulder area and stuff.
Yeah, he was friends with our manager, Chuck Morris, and so I think that's where the original connection came from.
So you guys pretty much rule the roost in that part of the country, and I guess you have some pretty loyal fans. I understand that a lot of them kind of follow you guys just about wherever you go. I don't know, are there some that you actually recognize? I mean, do you look off from the stage and see Susie and Johnny?
Sure, you bet.
Did you recognize any tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
No, there's a bunch of folks that follow us around.
Wow, that's awesome. How many albums have you guys had now?
I think 8 studio albums now.
Yeah. And the last one is the most recent one, like a live album or something? Or?
The most recent thing we did was a DVD at the Fillmore, live at the Fillmore, and a CD.
Which Fillmore? Is that in California?
Fillmore West, yeah, in San Fran.
I guess there's not one in Fillmore East anymore.
I guess not.
Yeah, I think I was there about 3 weeks before it closed. Well, I lived in New York City for a while. And the Allman Brothers played and did their famous album at the Fillmore.
Wow.
And then we saw Humble Pie. And then they said, and now we have a special group, Reggie. I kept trying to think who they said. Reggie and the Somebody. And it was Reggie Dwight, who is Elton John.
Cool.
And that's what they were saying was during the last 2 weeks of the Fillmore, guest stars would drop in, you know.
With different names.
Yeah. He had these soccer boots on and shorts and everything. It was just a trio, him and a bass player. And
cool.
Oh, my God. That was back in the day, but that was the most unbelievable. I mean, you know, I thought, you know, Hold Me Closer, Tiny Dancer, you know, Country Road. And, you know, I mean, I thought he was this, like, folky guy. Man, he was playing Rolling Stones and all kinds of crazy stuff. That was great. So the guys in your band, have you all been together from the start, or have people drifted in and out of the band?
No, we started out as a trio, so the same three of us have been together, you know, since we started.
And that was you and the drummer?
The drummer and the bass player. Brian Evans, the drummer, and Rob Squires on bass.
Uh-huh.
And right now we have a keyboard player named Jeremy.
Yeah,
Lawton, and he plays slide and organ and a bunch of things.
Sounds great. Yeah, to hear the electric piano and the organ and stuff in there. Does that inspire you when you're playing to hear that extra music behind you, or do you really notice it?
It's not so much the extra music, it's the extra musicians, you know. Uh-huh. And Jeremy definitely is an inspiration to me, and I think he adds a lot to our sound.
He definitely does. So I guess the whole Columbine thing was kind of a bummer when that happened. I mean,
sure, it was a bummer for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, did I don't guess kids just weren't that way maybe back then. I mean, you know, I guess, I mean, there's always been kids that are made fun of, I guess, and kids that are kind of the nerd types and kids who are into the alternative thing. But, man, to actually decide to go and do something like that is just...
Yeah, it seems like the stakes are being raised all the time as far as violence. I'm not exactly sure what the answer is, but I think it's a cultural problem.
Well, you know, they blame it on video games and stuff like that and TV. I mean, I guess that's got to have something to do with it.
We're all to blame for it.
Yeah.
And
parents, you know.
It's the value that our culture teaches people. Our culture's become more entertainment, whereas it used to, you know, teach you stuff.
Yeah. Do you have any kids?
No, not yet.
No, not yet.
I got married 2 years ago. So
oh, is that right? So
I still got time.
Virtually a newlywed, yeah. After there is one more part of this, the conclusion of this interview will be, you know, in the next show. But after that, as I was thanking him and everything, he goes, "Oh, well, I have a podcast too." After I had already turned off my microphones, and I was like, "Why didn't you tell me that when we, you know, when we were talking and doing the interview?" But anyway, I wanted to tell you now so that you can go ahead and check out his podcast. If you go to iTunes, and this is what he told me, he said, "Go to iTunes, search for Philosophy, if you can." If you know how to spell that. But anyway, he has his podcast is him discussing philosophy. He's of Korean descent. And, I guess, I don't know. I don't really know that much about the different philosophies he's talking about, but I'm kind of assuming some of them were, ones that he grew up with. And I don't know if he, I asked him, I said, "Well, do you have a degree in it or anything?" And he said, "No, I'm just interested in it. I just like to talk about it." So, he talks about in his first podcast on his philosophy thing, it's called Todd Parkmore. His name is T-O-D-D-P-A-R-K, and then Moore, M-O-H-R. By the way, their website is bigheadtodd.com, bigheadtodd.com. And of course the link will be in the show notes to their website and everything. But, he's a fascinating guy. And, I noticed, in iTunes, I went and checked out his, more recently his podcast, and actually he has some songs up there. He talks about his day job being Big Head Todd and the Monsters, but, maybe he's trying out some songs to his fans out there. And I assume that because they're up there, as podcasts, they're free for you to download. Plus there's some songs on their website too, if you want to get some of their tunes. So next week we'll have part two of that interview with Big Head Todd.
This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Now we're going to have Alex, and he's going to do the next segment of his sound seeing tour of Mount Moriah Cemetery. And we've got quite a few photos up there now of the different, some of the gravestones and some of the areas that we've talked about. Also some video of Alex doing his tour. And as I said earlier, every time we do a new segment of the tour, I will be adding more and more photographs so that there will be more and more reasons for you to come back to realdeadwoodpodcast.com. So here we go with our next segment of our Mount Moriah tour with Alex.
We're going to go this way down through here, but I just want to point out this stone here with the name Hunter on it. This is obviously a rich family because they have a huge, huge stone here. This is yet another John Hunter, who was probably the first savior of Deadwood, I guess you could say. He came in the spring of 1877, and with him he brought a mining company. Basically, he had a portable sawmill hauled in by ox cart, which he set up here in town. Did a lot of the logging in the area, did actually all of the logging in the area at that time. And also owned a hardware store that sold his milled lumber, sold hammers and nails and things like that. And because he came in the spring, people were able to build all summer, build their houses and everything, because Deadwood was basically just a collection of tents before he came in. And it turns out that winter was the second worst winter in Deadwood's history. And had it not been for his milled lumber, Deadwood citizens probably would not have survived that winter living in the tents that they had set up. So, kind of crazy. Also, he was the co-founder of the Fish and Hunter Corporation, and the present-day City Hall resides in one of his old warehouses, Fish and Hunter warehouses. So, he still does have his mark here in town. Another grave I want to point out is, you guessed it, another John, just down from the J here, John Treber, was probably the smartest man in Deadwood ever. He was the first wholesale liquor dealer here in town. He opened up, you know, the first liquor place, and he supplied to every major saloon, every major private party, and every major probably not so private party. Kind of an interesting thing about him was that he and his family came from Germany, And one year they decided that they wanted to go back, visit family and friends, do the neighborly thing like that. But when they arrived, John was arrested and thrown in jail for 8 months for failing to serve his full term in the German military. But it just so happens that one of his good buddies and former employer was Adolphus Busch of the Anheuser-Busch Beer Company, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. And it also just so happens that Adolphus was a good drinking buddy of the Kaiser of Germany at the time. Pulled a couple of strings, hooked John up, got him out of jail, got him back to the U.S. 8 months later, 20 pounds lighter, but here nonetheless. And John also found time to joke that he would never again leave Deadwood, and as far as we know, he hasn't. I mean, unless, you know, he just walked away, but what can you do, I suppose, eh? So now we're about to come to probably the second best lookout of Deadwood in Deadwood. In my opinion, the best lookout is of White Rocks, which is about 3 miles above the cemetery and not a very pleasant hike.
But Jerry's going to ride us up there.
Yeah, sometime, hopefully, because that's an awesome place. Yeah. Anyway, the flag that we have here is actually the second. The first is just down the way. You can still see the remaining flagpole down there. The city of Deadwood had to move it, not because it was like blowing down or because it was old, but because that flagpole is on a private piece of property. And there's the garbage can that you can see right between the trees here. The piece of property runs from that garbage can to that group of trees right there. That's it. And the guy who owns that was going to charge the city of Deadwood $750,000 for that piece of land just to put their flagpole up. So they said, yeah, I don't think so. We're just going to move it for a grand and put up a new one. And so that's what they did. Also, we have a bronze sign just to the right of the flagpole that's just basically indicates that the flag is able to be flown 24 hours a day because it is lit up. We got that bronze sign from the government giving us that permission. This is probably the best spot to take pictures of the town itself. White Rocks is a good way to get the surrounding hills and everything. You can't necessarily see the entire town, but you can get a good feel for where you're at. And if you're not sure where you're at, if I've lost you, we are still in Mount Moriah Cemetery here, so stick with me. These blocks also, I learned from the mayor's wife, used to belong to a building that was where the elementary school sits now. And the building burnt down, but these blocks were saved. And they took these blocks and they were like...
Okay, bricks?
Yeah. Bricks, blocks, whatever. You'll take a picture of it. And so, but anyway, they stack these bricks in a pile that over the years collected a lot of mud and stuff. And the Boy Scouts, one day when they were out, they stumbled across these and they told the city and they cleaned them up and everything. So they used them here.
And as usual, some very interesting information there from my son Alex, my 16-year-old son, who was a tour guide over the summer at Mount Moriah Cemetery. We will be getting eventually to Mount Moriah's most heralded residents, you might say, which are, of course, Bill Hickok and Calamity Jane. Obviously, on his tour to tourists, he kind of saves that for last, so that's kind of the grand finale. So eventually, we will get there, and he'll talk all about their lives and their experiences in Deadwood. So make sure you come back, and eventually, we will get to that. And of course, pictures of their graves and pictures of lots of other Deadwood notables that will be added to the website. Our next segment now, as I promised, is some music from John Hawks' band, King Straggler. And again, kingstraggler.com is their website. There's information there on how to buy their CD. So we're going to go ahead now with a song called The Stranger's Lament. And if you look on the website, realdeadwoodpodcast.com, I've got a clip there. It's actually a little medley of some of the tunes they played when they performed here over the summer at the Adams Museum. And this is the song they start out with on the video clip. So make sure you check that out, and here we go.
All right, kick it off, boys.
Nobody knows that I'm rich. Nobody knows I got a big cock. Nobody knows that I look better naked. Nobody knows why I got in my sock. Nobody knows that I'm a catch. Nobody knows that I'm sweet. Nobody knows I cry at sappy movies. Nobody knows that I refuse to cheat. Nobody knows I'm alive.
He's alive. He's alive. He's
nobody knows I'm alive. I seek the truth. Nobody knows I'm complicated. Nobody knows I got a lot of soul. Nobody knows how much I'm underrated. Nobody knows that I'm smart. Nobody knows that I'm strong. Nobody knows that I'm a movie star. Nobody knows that I wrote this song. Nobody knows I'm alive.
He's alive, he's alive, he's alive.
Nobody knows I'm alive. Nobody knows I'm alive. Nobody knows I'm alive.
And there we have John Hawks and King Straggler. Now, if you're in the Southern California area, there is a place that John Hawks' band, King Straggler, and Earl Brown's band, Sacred Cowboys, they play quite frequently called the Knitting Factory, and it's about a block or so from the Grauman's Chinese Theater in downtown Hollywood. And believe it or not, it was my wife, Mary, and me who told each of these guys that the other one had a band. They were not aware. John was not aware that Earl had a band, and Earl was not aware that John had a band. And actually, we said, well, you know what? You guys should get together and play some jobs. And so since then, they have. Okay, our next segment features one of our Deadwood officials here. He is the director of the Deadwood Economic Development Corporation, and he's also the state representative to the state legislature from the district that Deadwood is in. His name is Chuck Turbeville, and here's part two of my interview with him. So, as far as the take, what's the annual revenue now to the state? Now, all the money that Deadwood takes in gaming, which started in 1989,
yep.
And was voted on by the state of South Dakota to allow gaming in Deadwood, of all the money that's taken in, Deadwood gets what? It's a fixed amount, right?
It's
and
a fixed
everything over and yeah. above that goes to the state?
Well, first of all, before Deadwood gets any money at all, the Gaming Commission takes whatever expenses they need to operate right off the top. And that's usually between $1 million and $1.2 million. Then, in addition to that, the Department of Tourism gets between $1.8 and $2.2 million.
And this is out of what size of a pot altogether, usually?
Well, this is out of it, and it depends. Deadwood Historic Preservation gets $6.8 million. That's set by law. But the $6.8 million goes in with the million plus that the Gaming Commission, $2 million for tourism. The General Fund of South Dakota gets a couple million dollars. We've got a $100,000 outside of Deadwood grant program. We've got a $500,000 grant program. By the time you get done with it, there's probably $15 million that is spread out throughout the state to include the $6.8 that Deadwood gets. Now, the $6.8 goes for historic preservation. And Paul, you drive down Deadwood, the fronts of these buildings look exactly as they did before gaming. Some of them look exactly as they did turn of the century, yep. 1900. And that's what I really like about the way the laws in South Dakota are concerning gaming is you cannot change the outside appearance of a building. You can repair it, you can fix it up, but you can't change it.
Right.
So you don't have, like you have in like in Colorado, you know. Hey, you guys down in Colorado, I'll tell you right now, what you've done to some of your old towns down there is really unfortunate.
It's a crime.
They will tear down historic buildings to put up Las Vegas-type casinos, and I don't like that. I like the way Deadwood's got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, people see Deadwood on TV, and they see the boardwalks and the hitching yep. posts and the storefronts, and then they come here to Deadwood now, and some people are kind of surprised to see that the Deadwood of today that we live in is like you say, the turn of the century. It's being portrayed as the turn of the century, which is all brick pretty much. After the town burned down, what, two or three times?
A couple times in the
and,
flood.
And flooded a bunch of times. They finally wised up and said, you know what, let's rebuild out of brick this time. So you come down, you know, you drive down the main street of Deadwood on sort of cobblestone brick-lined streets, and the buildings are all brick. But in order for people not to be too bummed out after seeing it on TV, tell everybody about our facade and what's going on with that, where it's going to go.
Well, of course, people that see the TV program, they come out here and they say, I want to see the old Deadwood. Well, the old Deadwood burnt down twice. It flooded out once. And the location of certain buildings, you know, they're no longer there. And the streets and the alleys of Deadwood today are in some cases 8 to 10 feet higher than they were back 150 years ago. So what the Chamber of Commerce did is we decided to, for those people that wanted to see what the old Deadwood looked like, we built a facade, put it over on a vacant piece of ground, and it looks great. It portrayed a lot of the old wooden buildings that were around at the 1890s.
So from what I understand, it's kind of a compromise between the what you see on the TV show and what Deadwood actually was like. And people can see what that looks like on the website. I actually have it as kind of the big graphic when you first come to the website. Are a couple of the buildings from the facade, and I'll have some other photographs up there so people can see exactly what that looks like. Yeah, what did that cost? Was $150,000?
About $150,000. But you know, when you see the TV program, you look at the old pictures. A lot of the original Deadwood was canvas and rough hewn logs and slabs that were just put up together. The streets were mud and they were somewhat fairly primitive buildings. As time went on, those primitive buildings turned into more permanent structures, and then of course, as you'd mentioned, the fire and the flood, and then the fire again. The facade that we have, which is going to be moved, mm-hmm. the place that we put it on was private property, and the individual gave us 2 years that. Put it up there, let people come and see it. But at the end of 2 years, I need to have my land back. Okay, that was a good deal. We went along with that. And the chamber has now worked a proposal with one of our casinos, First Gold Casino. They have an area around a parking lot and some new area that they're building, another hotel. They're going to take the facade and put it down there, and it's right at the entrance to town. So people coming in, one of the first things they're going to see is a modern-day portrayal of old Deadwood.
Okay, we've got some HBO Deadwood news right now. The show has won the American Film Institute Award as one of the top 10 shows of the year, and I believe that's the second year they've won that, so that is a tremendous honor. Also on that top 10 list are a couple other shows that I watch, which are Lost and Veronica Mars. Now, if you have never seen Veronica Mars, you really should start watching it. If you recall back to season one, where a girl and her brother come into town, the girl's name is Flora, and she seems so innocent, and they both wind up getting shot by Cy Tolliver. Kristen Bell played Flora, that girl, and she is the star of Veronica Mars. And because of that is why we started watching the show, and it's an absolutely incredibly good show. It's on UPN, and it's on Wednesday nights. Make sure you see that. Now, speaking of news about HBO Deadwood, on the realdeadwoodpodcast.com website, there's a page there called Deadwood News. And what that is I've got a feed that searches Google News for HBO Deadwood, and all the results automatically appear on that page. So I actually look at that page myself every day just to see what's going on with HBO Deadwood News, and you certainly can too. Also in HBO Deadwood related news, the Adams Museum and House recently received, actually my wife Mary Kopko and Jerry Bryant, who we heard earlier in the show, both received commendations from the Emmy Awards. Michael J. Kelly, who's the assistant art director for HBO, realized that they can, from the show, they can nominate or mention any organizations or people who have been helpful or instrumental in the winning of the Emmy Awards. And since the art department won an Emmy this year for HBO Deadwood, they put in my wife's name and put in Jerry Bryant's name, and they each received a really nice certificate from the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences with their names on them and stuff, saying that they were instrumental in helping HBO Deadwood to win the Emmy Award. So that's kind of out there in the news media right now. And finally, I'd like to mention a really awesome source for all you Deadwood fans if you're not already aware of it. It's called the Deadwood Blog, and it's deadwood.blog.com. And it's a blog that is maintained by the background actors for HBO Deadwood. The guys you see walking around in the background, talking to each other, buying things, leading horses, riding horses, the night shoots, you see them walking by with torches and stuff. And so there are a number of them. Michael Schaefer is the guy who I contacted and let him know about the realdeadwoodpodcast.com website. And he was nice enough to do a really nice, almost like a little article. I guess you'd call it a blog post. So I would definitely recommend that you go there to find out what's going on. They're also very active in following King Straggler and Sacred Cowboys. So if you're wondering where they might be playing, actually the Deadwood blog is a good source of information for that too. So go to deadwood.blog.com. And if you do subscribe to blogs, you might want to go ahead and add them to your collection and keep an eye and see what's going on with the Deadwood background actors as another source of information about your favorite show and mine, HBO Deadwood. And that is it for episode 4 of the Real Deadwood Podcast. Thank you so much for being with me here today. And I hope you'll be with me every week for all the fun and all the news and all the entertainment from both Deadwoods. The easiest way to do that would be to subscribe to the Real Deadwood Podcast, and you can do that a number of ways. Go to realdeadwoodpodcast.com. You can click on a button there that will shoot you into iTunes and take you to the page that will allow you to subscribe there. You can subscribe on any number of websites that allow podcast subscriptions to be kept track of. There's a bunch of buttons there for that. And also there's a button there called Podcatchers, and that's the software that you can use if you don't want to use iTunes to subscribe to the podcast. And load one of those things on your computer, push the right button, and you'll be subscribed there as well. I'd love for you to leave me some feedback and let me know what you think of the show. You can Skype me at Real Deadwood Podcast. You can also email me at realdeadwoodpodcast@gmail.com. The music you're hearing right now is from my CD called Black Hills Gold. The tune is Black Hills Fairy Gold. It's available through iTunes. You can click a button on the website and it'll take you there. You can buy just this one tune, or you can buy all the tunes from the CD. Or if you want to buy a plastic CD, there's a button there that'll take you to my pauldennis.com website. You can buy a tape there too. Remember those? Thank you so much for being here again. From the Real Deadwood, South Dakota, this is Paul Dennis wishing you all the best.